Now, the Buddha's teaching, his communication, was completely oral, completely spoken, except, of course, when he was communicating through silence and gesture, and he did communicate through silence and gesture. But his teaching was oral. The Buddha didn't write a word. He didn't write anything down. And in fact, he probably couldn't read or write. Quite an interesting thought there. Probably couldn't read or write. Neither probably could his senior disciples. In fact, reading and writing, from what we're able to ascertain at that time, was regarded as a rather vulgar activity, just engaged in by merchants. It was an oral culture, which is quite a thought, really. And for centuries, in fact, the Buddha's teaching was actually transmitted orally. It was an oral tradition, handed down, you know, from one generation to another. But eventually, it was written down, and various collections have come down to us, written forms of the Buddha's teaching. And many of which have been translated into modern languages, including the Dhammapada. The Dhammapada. This comes from a section of the Buddhist scriptures called the Miscellaneous, collection. And in the Miscellaneous collection, there are lots of very ancient Buddhist texts. I mean, the scholars apparently can work out what's really old in Nepali, because it's using a more archaic form of the language and so on. But the Dhammapada, you know, whatever with all that, the Dhammapada has obviously been very popular from the beginning. It's a very handy collection of verses, sayings, even aphorisms that disciples of the Buddha remembered and collected and put together. And generally, they're pretty simple and direct sayings. You know, when you read the Dhammapada, it's sort of, you're getting the Buddha's teaching in a very pure form, a very kind of essentialized form, a very pure in the sense of very idealistic. It doesn't go in for a lot of explanation. You'll probably notice this when you read it. It just tells you how to be and how to live. There's no sort of invitation, would you like to perhaps consider, maybe. It just tells you to give this up and to do this and to do that, which can make it a little bit hard to handle, especially for us moderns, where, you know, we get very concerned about our autonomy and individual agency. But obviously in its original context of people who were really urgently concerned with living the spiritual life and urgently concerned to gain enlightenment, and the Buddha was responding to that, it has a real sort of force and meaning. I mean, when you're really up for a spiritual life, you don't mind, if you like, someone being very, very direct about, you know, what it entails. So it's very important when we come across some of the verses to remember that context. You know, the Buddha wasn't authoritarian. He went around telling people what to do, you know, because he was on some sort of trip. He was urgently concerned that people would, you know, lead a vital spiritual life, and the people he's talking to in these verses are serious about it. So do bear that in mind if you find some of the verses a bit challenging and a bit hard-hitting. The aim of the verses always is to move us towards enlightenment, and we need to engage with them in that way, even though they seem very direct, very challenging. Engage with them in that way. We might disagree with them. We might find that there's things that we don't like in them. But just bear in mind that they're concerned to move us towards the ideal of wisdom and compassion. That is the concern.